Hello, sustainability partners. This is Lydia van den Broek, here to share with you best practices around sustainability in hospitality and tourism. And by sustainability, I mean more than mere ecological sustainability, which has thankfully moved into the center of our collective attention over the last few years. If you want to run a truly sustainable operation, you need to also assure economic sustainability, primarily through excellent guest service, and human as well as social sustainability by training and empowering your staff and including the communities that you interact with. How? Well, this is where I come in, and I talk to real people in real businesses to hear about real solutions to real challenges, and I'm happy to share these learnings with you. So if you want to become more sustainable, I invite you to listen in to our conversations and pick out some of these gold nuggets that you can hopefully use in your own operations. And as a side note, every one of my guests has offered to make themselves available for a more in-depth conversation. So by all means, do reach out, connect, and together we can make hospitality and tourism more sustainable. Friends of sustainability. It's Lydia here at the tail end of a long winter and coincidentally or not, with a sustainability success story right from the heart of the Alps. You've heard me say it before, just like it takes a village to raise a kid, so is each individual operator just so much better off when they and their operation are nestled in a community of sustainability where everyone can thrive on the synergies created among operators of a similar mindset and a joint vision. Having said all that, I'm so thrilled to introduce you to Manuel Beachnow. Manuel is the CEO of Montafon Tourism, Montafon, of course, being a beautiful alpine area in the region of Vorarlberg in my home country of Austria. He lets us in on the very successful long-term development of a sustainable tourism area, the benefits everyone reaps from focusing on it, and the opportunity it brings for all the stakeholders. So, without further ado, welcome to this conversation. Welcome, Manuel, and enjoy. Hi, Manuel. Welcome to our little podcast here. It's a particular pleasure to have you on our show here, since it's the first time we actually have a representative from a mountainous region here. And I think that's fantastic, not only because I love the mountains and I love skiing and everything that has to do with the mountains, but I think it's also so, so important when we think about sustainability. We oftentimes do connect, you know, beach properties, maybe safaris, maybe, you know, islands that suffer from the climate changes. But of course, you and I are both coming from Austria, although from different parts of Austria, opposite ends of Austria almost. Of course, to us, the mountains are in the forefront of our awareness and consciousness when it comes to ecological sustainability. So I think it's particularly important. Not just for people, for listeners who come from similar areas, but the reason why I did invite you was because I know you're doing so much, and even people living in areas that have nothing to do with mountains or snow, I know can benefit tremendously from what we have, from what you have to share here. So, welcome, Manuel Beachnow. Lovely to have you here.
A pleasure to be with you.
So you are not just from any mountainous region, you are from the beautiful, beautiful area of Montafon in Vorarlberg, yes, in Austria. So before we go into all of the details of the fantastic things that you are doing, paint us a picture of Montafon. What makes it special? Go.
Well, Montafon is in the most western region of Austria, in the state of Vorarlberg, and it's bordering Switzerland. I think it's just like in a picture book. It's just the way you imagine a mountainous area to look like, whether it's in the summer, in the spring, in the fall, or in the winter time. And now it's picture perfect. We have tremendous snow in the ski regions, so lots of skiers on our slopes. We have sunny weather, and we're just enjoying time here in the mountains.
And Montafon, I don't know, maybe it's just for me, but it has a special ring to it. Is there something that differentiates Montafon from other mountain regions in the Alps?
Well, it has a very long history. It's very diverse. It has three different mountain ranges, four different ski and hiking resorts. The people are very friendly. We're close in relations to the Swiss. We also speak Swiss dialect in the area. Our culinary repertoire is a mixture of the Swiss Southern German dishes and also, mm-hmm. of course, the Austrian dishes. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of guests from all over the world, but mostly from Germany, Switzerland, the Netherlands and Belgium. Mm-hmm. Very few Austrians, so maybe that will change. But it's, you know, Austria is not very large, but it's very long. So mm-hmm. it takes a long time to get here. And I mm-hmm. have to admit that other regions in Austria also have nice mountains.
Yeah,
so that's why we focus on the Western
that's just Austria,
markets.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So you've been the CEO of Montafon Tourism for over 10 years, 11 years, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
Tell me, Montafon Tourism is special. As far as its tourism approach is concerned, it only just received the Austrian Environmental Award. Is that what you would call it? It's
yes.
only the sixth region to get it in Austria. So tell us more about what this award stands for, please.
Well, first, one has to understand that we merged all the tourism organizations in Montafon in 2013. Mm-hmm. And since then, we are responsible for all the towns. We cooperate with the ski resorts, but we are responsible for a lot of local activities. And a few years ago, we said, we think we are very sustainable, but we wanted to know how far we are in that process. And that Austrian award really is a very big, it's a very long program. It started in the 80s already. It was one of the first eco labels you could get. And okay. Since 2 years, you can get it as a destination. Before, okay. you could only do it as a hotel or some other company. But now you can do it as a touristic destination. And we said we want to do that because we founded 4 years ago our PITS, it's a future laboratory, which we call it, okay. Where we a special team of our company works on sustainable projects. And they said, when we do the certification, then we also start to get to know where we should lay more focus on, because you have to cover all these more than 100 parts of this certification. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not only energy and water management, but it's also social projects or you know, employer projects, mm-hmm. and other things. So you get to know where you should lay more focus on, so you don't miss any area of sustainability, because sustainability, mm-hmm. as we know, consists of more than just the ecological part.
Right. Okay. So you did it because you knew you were sustainable, but you wanted to know just how good you were and where else you would have to fill in order to be really among the greatest of
right.
doing a particularly good job.
We found out we're doing really great, but we got some homework as well. So
okay.
we have some homework for the next 2-3 years in order
okay.
to get recertified in three
okay.
years.
Okay. Excellent. So when you started in your job, what were your main challenges when it came to sustainability in the area?
Well, first of all, I think to create a mindset. What does sustainability really mean?
Okay.
Because people, or maybe a hotel tells me, you know, if I put solar panels off my roof, then I'm sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know that it's a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm.
We focused on several projects on this ecological focus. So, you know, energy, as I said, water, waste management, and mobility, you know, public transport and all these things. But then we also focused on the economic part of sustainability? How can our businesses prosper for a long period of time? How can we arrange how young people take over hotels, their family hotels? That's not always very easy. But also the social aspect. How can we, you know, how are we supposed to treat our staff in the hotels? How are we supposed to treat the neighbors, the delivery companies, and all these things? Mm-hmm. Those were new aspects of sustainability. And we started different projects in all these things. But as I said, first, the mindset. You have to create the mindset. We started with some lecturers, with some excursions and some small groups. We invited people to events and told them about other areas and started to create this mindset. So now we have a lot of companies and hotels and small accommodations, but also the ski resorts, who most of them now hire people, especially for this part of the work, and we can work with them and exchange a lot of knowledge.
And I like the holistic approach that you've been pursuing. And you know what they say, it takes a village to raise a kid, right? And it also takes a village. And when one person is sustainable or one hotel is sustainable, it, you know, it's good. It's better than if they weren't, but it's really better if it's embedded in an environment that has a mindset, as you say, of sustainability. Now, your region encompasses, you mentioned them, hotels and smaller accommodations, right? Like bed and breakfast and so forth. Yes. And who else is part of Montafon Tourism? Who else belongs to your region?
Well, we have about 1,500 accommodations in this region. Okay. It's a total of 24,000 guest beds, which isn't which is a lot, knowing that we only have 16,000 inhabitants in this area. Mm-hmm. And we have eight touristic towns. We have 10 towns, but only 10 of them have tourism. Mm-hmm. And we have four cable car companies. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they're quite large. Mm-hmm. So we're actually the 10th largest ski area in Austria. Mm-hmm. And a very long history, more than 100 years, which is... So yeah. Tourism is very settled in this area, and actually a third of the people work in the tourism industry.
Right. So it has a long history of being in tourism. That means that people are also very much aware of the relevance of tourism, obviously, for their region. And did you have a hard time convincing people that sustainability was the way forward?
It was harder to convince the businesses, because it also means, you know, you have to invest. It mm-hmm. costs money. The mm-hmm. transformation costs money. You have to handle things differently. Mm-hmm. But it helps us that the markets have changed their mindsets, that the guests actually expect that you operate sustainable, that you have local food, that you know, watch your energy, which we've always done. I mean, mm-hmm. Especially Montafon Valley has produced its electricity from water power since more than 100 years. So all these things are normal to us. We have a train line going directly into the heart of the valley from outside, so you can come here by train, mm-hmm. things like this. We also noticed that the regular population, mostly the ones who don't work directly in tourism, mm-hmm. start to become more, you know, critical about the touristic development, because they say, you know, do we need more guests in the area? Don't we have too much traffic? I mean, overall, the problems aren't great, but we have to lay focus on these parts. And that's why in 2019, we started the project of, you would call it habitat management in English. In German, it's called Lebensraum Management, which means the management of the, you know, the region where the locals live.
It's literally the place where we all live in, right? Yes. Which is a beautiful, really a beautiful way of describing it, right? It's the place where we live in, right?
And so as a destination management organization, we don't only focus on marketing the area mm-hmm. and providing services for our guests, but in everything we do, we have to keep in mind the local population mm-hmm. and see, are we developing tourism to the benefit of the mm-hmm. local people? Mm-hmm. How are we distributing the money that comes to this area through tourism? Mm-hmm. Do only the hotels profit from it, or the cable car companies, or What about the delivery companies or the producers of local food? Do we do we strengthen them? Do we strengthen these local exchanges? And how do we bring them together? Mm-hmm. And this is what we focus on. To keep the locals in mind. A lot of areas in this world are starting to do that. Amsterdam does it, Denmark, but also Seattle and other areas are much further in that kind of thinking. Mm-hmm. But in Austria, it's quite new. So we started that in 2019. And now I work together with a lot of other touristic areas who want to go the same way and realize that if you don't do that, then you will get a problem in a few years because people will say stop after a while and say, and I always say tourism came to these rural areas and to the mountainous areas in order to make it profitable for everyone who lived there. You know, you developed infrastructure, everyone was working or participating in tourism. And in the last few decades, that development had changed. So people don't necessarily need to work in tourism because there's other businesses or traffic increased and tourism takes more space, which is a burden sometimes.
Locals don't get place in a restaurant on Friday nights.
So we
become
do not,
expensive, right?
Right. We do not have a lot of problems yet, but we have to watch it closely and start, you know, preventing these things from happening. And this is what public tourism organizations like we should start doing much more. So there's a transformation also in the Austrian destinations right now. Some of them are still thinking, you know, we should still focus only on marketing and do campaigning. But more and more are realizing that we have to take this holistic approach in doing our work, which takes a lot of resources as well. You have to have people to work for you. To focus on these things and also the projects cost a lot of money.
But if not, then you're going to have the locals who really resent the tourists. And, you know, if we say that tourists go to a place because they want to more today, more than ever, they want to experience holistically, right? They don't just normally just go to a whatever Club Med of the 70s, right? And be in their enclave and then just stay there, but they want to experience it. And if you're going to have grumpy locals, then that's part of the experience they're not going to have, right?
Yeah, that's a specialty about the Alps, I think, because in the Alpine areas, there's limited space. So the tourists and the locals are much closer to each other as if I go to other continents where there's just more space and I don't notice that as much. But here, you know, you can't avoid meeting. Also the nature or the animals, the wild animals, you know, you're just so close and you have to start managing these things and trying to avoid conflicts.
From the beginning. So you're saying you don't have much conflict yet, but you know that this is a possibility. And obviously you have your eyes and your ears open of what's going on in Barcelona, Venice, right? And other places. And that's not even talking about some of the beachfront areas, right? Where locals are completely just, they don't have any more space there, right?
Correct.
To live there, to avoid that from the very beginning.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a big task to tackle. And it's so multifaceted, right? It's energy, it's waste, it's transportation, it's the social, human aspect. And then everything needs to be paid for and needs to be sustainable financially as well.
We started by defining 150 so-called dialogue groups. Because before that, a tourism organization or marketing organization like we focused on guests or on the hotels or on public transport, you know, we had few partners to work with. And then we said, no, we have to also talk to the hunters or the forests or the environmental protection agencies. We also have to work together with local producers. We have to work together with the schools, with youth organizations. And now we're listening to these groups very closely. We defined them. We are in exchange with them regularly. And then we hear, you know, what are their problems? How do they see tourism? And then we can react and change our processes. And that's very successful so far. Because they feel that, you know, you take them seriously, that they are heard. And as a tourist holistic organization, we also learn about other needs.
Mm-hmm.
We don't only see the needs of a guest, which we are, you know,
right.
used to do for decades. We know exactly what our guests need and want.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have this other focus. And
mm-hmm.
we also realize that they don't contradict each other.
Yeah.
You just have to keep them both in mind and match them together.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
the local producer, he wants to sell his meat, his milk and his cheese. And the guest wants to consume local meat and cheese. So it's a perfect match.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
If I talk to the youth organizations, they want perfect skiing infrastructure. They want public swimming pools in the summer and they want mountain bike
mm-hmm.
routes. So we also need them for the guests. So we do not separate these two groups
mm-hmm.
anymore and say,
mm-hmm.
you know, everyone uses everything and it's for the benefit of everyone. And
of
that
everyone.
That doesn't even cost anything more.
Yeah.
But you still say everyone's welcome and but you address them differently. You know,
yeah.
we now are doing campaigning into the region also, and we tell the locals about the touristic offers that are in the area, what they can do in their free time. Which
they might not even be aware of, right?
Yes,
because they're not being marketed.
They don't go on our website usually
right.
because they think only the guests go on the website. They do not go into a tourist office.
No.
But now we're changing the names of the tourist office, for example. We call
okay.
them Montafon information now and
okay.
not tourist information because everyone should
Who
go
Who wants
in.
To be a tourist anyway, right? We're not.
Yes, yes.
Nobody's a tourist, right?
Exactly. So,
uh-huh.
and also the events. We organize a lot of events during the year. And in former days, maybe someone focused on only addressing the guests. What would
mm-hmm.
the guests like? And now we do events for everyone. And we notice that now we have 50-50 of the
mm-hmm. really?
The visitors, which is very nice. And we also want these people to meet because especially in the Alps, I think, because there's limited space, you as a guest are always part of the local
mm-hmm.
community. You do not want to be separated in your
mm-hmm.
in your little resort. You want to be, you know, be part of the village and see how
mm-hmm.
the locals live. And that's
mm-hmm.
perfect. You can experience that perfectly during an event
mm-hmm.
When you sit next to locals and you talk about
mm-hmm.
these things.
Mm-hmm. And I think it becomes more of a normal thing, right? It's not artificial. Like we're doing something and this is for the guests and then this is how normal people live. It's, you know, you're elevating everything to a level that's really good and
it's
enriching for everybody, right?
Yes, it's actually going back to the roots of tourism because
mm-hmm.
that's how it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started to become more professional and
right.
and technical and resorts were created and all these things. And we are very lucky that we did not destroy a lot
mm-hmm.
during the last few years. But I just see the danger of the development if we do not start reacting that way and trying to think back what tourism actually is in the mountainous
yeah.
area.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like
because
that.
If you when you talked about these resorts, if I go to Northern Africa and I just sit mm-hmm. in one of these closed off resorts,
mm-hmm.
A lot of people maybe like that.
Yeah,
they're very efficient,
mm-hmm.
but the local areas do not benefit from these resorts.
Right.
Usually, the taxes aren't paid enough. The people, the poor people there, work for very little money,
mm-hmm.
and the profits go to some European company
somewhere else. Right.
So
right.
That's not good for an area.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, in Europe and especially in the Alps. That hasn't come so far, but
mm-hmm.
we also have to prevent it from going into that
mm-hmm.
direction and
yeah.
always keeping the local people in mind because mm-hmm. I say tourism uses the space.
Mm-hmm.
Tourism actually has influence on the habitat
mm-hmm.
of the locals.
Mm-hmm.
So that habitat also has to benefit from
yeah.
tourism
yeah. Yeah.
and
yeah.
that has to be managed.
And then everybody can benefit from it, right? It's the original win-win, right? And you just have to
yes.
pay attention and then you're going to be successful in the long term, right? It might be a little more investment in the short term, time and money and other resources, but in the long term for the next generation. And that's a good thing, right? I mean, if anything,
sustainability.
Our people, we think in generations, right? We don't think
yes.
in quarters, we think in generations, right?
Yes, yes.
We tend to think so. So the Alps, Alpine regions have been hit by the changes in climate. I think that's a given, right? What are some of the challenges that you experience and how are you working on handling those challenges? Could you give us some examples?
Well, first of all, I must say the Alps will also be one of the beneficiaries of the climate change.
Okay, because, so it's a mindset thing also.
Yes, we have the altitudes. So when other countries and areas get hotter, you can flee into the Alps and spend a cooler summer holiday, which used to be actually 100 years ago. You remember the German word, maybe Sommerfrische. Absolutely. People from the hot cities fled into the mountains and spent their summer vacations there. And I think there's a great future coming up because the Alps, the weather becomes more stable in the summer, which is also a benefit, which was always a downside in the past. Of course, we have problems, especially with winter tourism. We noticed the change for a long time already. But luckily, we also started to adapt to it. We started to focus more on summer, spring, and autumn. We built some infrastructure there. We focus more on summer tourism. So we try to balance winter and summer evenly. Luckily, Montafon will be one of the beneficiaries because we will, because of our altitude, we can still have winter tourism and skiing for many decades to come. All the climate models show us that. If you're a lower ski area, you will become problems, of course. You will get problems very soon. So we're focusing on skiing in even higher altitudes. We do not focus on the lower ski areas anymore. We say, you know, change to summer tourism more and more. We, especially this winter, it's a good example because Easter is very late and we have a very long ski season. So the time from mid-March to mid-April will be very difficult for skiing already. So now you can rent mountain bikes. You can use the summer activities from climbing to even playing golf.
You're basically starting the summer earlier.
Yes. So because the infrastructure is there, that's also a mindset. Because you can't maybe ski in all the areas, you can still do a lot. And what is the focus when you go on holiday? You know, you want to spend time with your family. You want to be active. You want to have good food. You maybe want to have a pool. You want to go hiking. You can do all these things besides skiing. And so now we, I mean, now it's very sunny and a lot of people are mountain biking already.
Really?
In February. So
a few years ago. Are the rental places open? Are the rental places open for mountain
biking? Yes. And this is our management focus.
That's important, right?
As the public organization, we talk to these shops and say, why don't you also offer mountain bikes? And when we asked that 10 years ago, they just laughed at us. And they said, well, winter ends at the mid of April, and then we'll have a break for 3 weeks. And in May, you can ask about mountain biking. But now it's not only us asking, it's the guests asking. The guests also have changed their mindset. And in February, they think, why don't just sit on a bike and ride up the mountain?
If there's no snow and it's a nice weather out, why not, right? Like you say,
Right now, when I look outside, I just thought about it yesterday. The ski resorts are open. You can ski. Even the ski slopes down into the valley are still open. But the golf course is preparing to open very soon. We have an ice rink that you can use. But also the football fields are open already. So there's also already matches going on there. You can go mountain biking. There's events in town. There's a market in town. So we can play these things almost all year round. So I think
you have
very
to be flexible.
Prepared.
That's the message. You have to be flexible and you can't make the snow come, I mean, to a certain degree, but you can adapt your offerings to what the environment is giving you. Right.
And if the COVID pandemic has had one benefit, then it's that the tourism industry has become very flexible because there we had to change our things within 3 weeks all the time. The rules changed and the activities had to change. So this has, I think that has changed the mindset also that we do not think in these classic, you know, winter, summer and everything is stable for a few years. We reinvent ourselves new after every season, I think.
Learn and look into the future, right?
Yes.
Talking about the future, I looked this up when we talked about it earlier. You are the ambassador. Let me see if I get this right. It sounds different in German, okay? But trying to translate, it's the so-called Ministry of Curiosity and How, what do we say? Joy for the future, or
joyful future, positive future, yeah.
Positive future, something like that. It has something about joy and future, and basically to be joyful about the future. Tell us more about this interesting ministry.
Well, we all should focus on the future because that's the time we intend to live in. You know, we've heard that saying, but I think there's a lot of negativity in this world, and I understand where all these things come from, and maybe people are afraid of the future. And that's, I think that's very dangerous for the economy and for all of us if people become pessimistic about the future. And I always say there have been much, much worse times in our history than now. And if we think about it, especially where we live, hardly anyone has a reason to complain about the actual situation. I mean, it's become harder, but we're far away from let's think about 80 years ago, you know?
Right.
So we have to stay positive about the future. If people now say, you know, why should I have a child? Because they will have a terrible world. Right. Then I think luckily people during the Second World War didn't think that way because they wouldn't be around.
Right.
So they were even positive. So we have to stay positive and we have to do our little share for a positive future. We all can do our very little thing on that way there. And we're doing economically, you know, actually well. We have some disturbances now, but it's not that bad. We live in a wonderful country. We should focus on that and say, you know, how can we develop that in order to stay sustainable in all these areas, in the economic way, but also in the ecological way, and also in the social way. So people have to stay positive. It's a mindset thing.
It's a mindset again. That's right. The ministry is not an official ministry. It's nothing religious, nor is it a government organization, as it would be translated in German, right? Ministry, rather the religious bit in English. It's an NGO, right? If I understand this correctly. And their aim is to do what? To spread optimism for the future.
Right. So they want to attract people who are optimistic about the future and also strengthen them in their belief. You get a lot of studies that are very positive because the future and the actual situation isn't as bad as people think. I don't know if you know the book Factfulness.
Yeah, actually, we have it.
I think it's a great book. And everyone who's negative about the future or about the actual situation, I said, read this easy book. It's written very easily, but it actually shows you how good the world is. You know that the media and the social media, they live off negative news. But there's also a lot of positive developments out there in this world. And this ministry tells you about these things. So everyone can join. You know, bring in his or her little share about optimism in the future. And I think this world needs more of that.
And these days more than in a long time in the past. So looking at other things going forward, and I'll include the link in the show notes for everybody to get on the page if they want to. Now looking into the future more specifically, you have a couple of World Cups coming up in your area. You want to make them super sustainable. What are some of the ideas that you have in mind for the events that are coming up? First of all, what are these events and what do you have planned for them?
Well, in mid-March, we have our annual World Cup in snowboard freestyle. Because we have some local heroes in the area. The Olympic champion of snowboarding living here in the area. But in 2027, we will host the World Championships for the snowboard, free ski, and freestyle style disciplines. We actually this weekend have a test event in one of our ski resorts, and in 2 weeks another one, because we have to prove that we can host this big event. But our focus is also not to have just a regular World Championship or World Cup. We want to have it. We want it to be the most sustainable event ever have taken place. So we are focusing on public transport more, also on. You know, we're avoiding any kind of plastic in these events. The water resources, the energy resources, where we have people stay, there are a lot of things that we have to think about how to make mm-hmm. these events sustainable. We actually do this all year long, also for the other events. Mm-hmm. For example, as I said, we avoid or we only use reusable dishes.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to do that, that costs a lot of money. It's more mm-hmm. expensive to have mm-hmm. that. But in the long term, it's beneficial. So mm-hmm. we bought all these dishes, mm-hmm. thousands and thousands of plates and cutlery and glasses and everything. And every local club or community or anyone who is hosting an event can borrow these things from us for free.
Okay.
So they say we need 1,000 plates, so they can get them the next day, really? And they can bring okay. them back 30. We do all the cleaning for them.
Okay.
And then they don't have to buy all these plastic things. So we have okay. avoided tons and tons and tons of plastic items during the last few years. When you go to an event in the Montafon, public transport is included in your ticket automatically. So okay. from anywhere in the country, you can come here by, I must say the state, I'm sorry, it's not all mm-hmm. of Austria, it's the state.
Mm-hmm.
You can just travel here for free.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to avoid traffic.
Mm-hmm.
We sort all the waste. There's a lot of waste management in the right. the background. We pay people correctly, which is also a okay. part of sustainability.
Just right. Because getting good people is a challenge, right? And if you don't yes. have the people, then you can't really offer the service. You can't offer the service. You don't get right. the tourists, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You so pay them well, and we're you train focusing them, on... right? You have them trained.
Yes, and... of course, mm-hmm. all year long. And mm-hmm. and that's also a change of mind, which wasn't easy in the beginning.
Right.
Because if you're an event manager, you say, no, let's just order plastic cups for this event, and then the waste company will come and pick it up.
And boom, it's
because
gone, right?
Yeah. It's gone, because I don't see it anymore. And I always right. said, if you would just magic. Leave all this rubbish and trash left behind, then uh-huh, everyone would right. say, oh, no, you can't do that. But usually it's picked up during the night, and it's out mm-hmm, of sight and mm-hmm, out of mind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we changed that. And, mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm. and just this, this last summer, actually, we had 18 events that rented these what? Things from us.
Okay.
Got them. So it's a lot.
Okay. Let me interfere here. Can you, I mean, this should save you money on trash removal and so forth. Is this at all, can you feel that already, that it's saving you? I mean, it's a logistical challenge, right? To distribute the plates, bring them back, have them washed, the investment of them. Can you feel any of the benefits yet, except, you know, financially, yes. I mean?
Because we calculate these numbers every year. We have to report them every year
okay.
because we're part of a sustainability group.
Uh-huh.
But also it's also nice when these organizers come after the event and say, you know, now I saved a lot of money because I didn't have to pay for the waste.
Okay.
And so that's nice if they realize it themselves. So none of them has gone back to the old-fashioned way
plastic.
Of...
Right.
Yes.
Right.
So that's a nice sign, I think.
Uh-huh. Well, that is that all sounds just so encouraging. Yeah. Encouraging that there are ways out. I'm definitely taking away. Mindset is the first, it's the last, it's everything. I'm not going to sing it, but it's really, really strong, right? What mindset to start this out with, and then to keep on changing mindsets, right? To stay flexible on the mindset, and through the mindset, everything else falls into place, right?
Yes. Maybe I can tell you about another little project we started 2 years
please.
Ago. We do not have a large public indoor pool
okay.
in the area mm-hmm. because the area, I think, is too small and it's too expensive to operate a public pool. Mm-hmm. And as we know, they need a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to heat that water and all the air, and it's not very sustainable, any public pool.
And the maintenance and the chlorine and
yes. So and the area is too small to have a big public indoor
right.
pool. But people, of course, want to go swimming somewhere, and you mm-hmm. have swimming schools, swimming lessons, and all these things. Mm-hmm. So they always had to go into another region.
Mm-hmm.
And then within a small group, we said, you know, we have a lot of indoor pools in our hotels
mm-hmm.
for the guests,
mm-hmm.
but the guests don't swim there 24 hours a day.
Right.
During the day, they go skiing, and usually they go there in the evening, but in the afternoons, for example, these pools are empty.
Mm-hmm.
But how do locals know about these pools, and
right.
how can a hotel avoid too many external people in that pool when the guests come back so the pool doesn't, you know, overflow?
Right.
So now we created a digital system, and you can book a a ticket in a swimming pool in a hotel. So we created this platform. The hotel puts in the times and the slots when they think they have more slots available. The locals book their tickets. They're very cheap, from maybe €3 to €6 for a 2-hour slot. And then you can go there with your family. And you know exactly, you know, you are allowed to go into this pool. You pay at the hotel or by booking, and the hotel gets a little more
right.
money.
Right.
And I also learned from a hotel that usually is closed in the fall, in the autumn. They said, we have to leave the water in there anyway to heat it.
Right.
But before, it was empty for weeks. And now we have a lot of local people swimming there, and we earn enough money so we can pay for these heating costs. So I think everyone benefits because the infrastructure is there anyway. The pools are used because they're heated anyway. And the locals now have an opportunity to go swimming and don't have to take the car and go into another region. And the region
taking
doesn't
the car,
have to
especially
build,
taking the car, right?
And the region doesn't have to build a public pool, which costs a lot of money and uses more energy. So we've operated this platform for 1 year now, and we've had 3,000 people booking slots there already. So that's just one small project that you have to just think differently.
Yeah. And it's another benefit for the locals, right?
Yes.
Especially for the locals, right? That I'm thinking families with kids or elderly people who might not want to, you know, leave and take the bus and then and all these good things. And it seems like you have a lot of creative people on your team. That takes
Luckily.
A lot of creativity. And it
Luckily.
Shows that when you've done the work, like you said, you started a long time ago, of dialogue and of, you know, creating the mindset and supporting a mindset, and obviously being a trustworthy partner also to locals and to your stakeholders, of course, then when you come up with an idea like this, clearly you get a lot of positive response, and people are willing to try experiments, right?
That came out of one of these dialogue groups.
Really?
I talked to the locals and they said, we want a public swimming pool.
Right, right.
And, but who's supposed to build it if the communities don't have enough money to do that? And I said to the hotels, why don't you open your pools to the locals? And they said, well, I can't do that because I don't know how many would come.
Right. You can't.
So if it's a rainy day, then all my hotel guests want to use the pool. And if then 100 locals come inside, then I have a problem.
Right.
So with that system, the hotel can manage how many people come in. And the locals can just see what slots are open to book and book there, and don't have to be afraid to walk into a hotel and ask.
Right, which would be uncomfortable normally.
Yes,
right? Yeah,
no
yeah,
one does
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Now they buy the ticket online, walk into that hotel, and are accepted, and everyone's happy.
Fantastic. So we're taking away. It starts with the mindset. It starts with building long-term relationships among all the stakeholders, and make sure everybody understands what's at stake here and how we can best all benefit from a healthy, holistic, and sustainable tourism operation, right? And then on that foundation, you can come up and listen, continue listening to the people, and then find solutions that are really win-win. They want that, they have that. How do we find a way of making both of these things come true, right?
That's the key. It's listening. Mm-hmm. And this is what we are not used to anymore. You know, social media doesn't train us to listen. You form an opinion right away. Everyone has their opinion. I just tell everyone the world isn't black and white. The world is a lot of shades of gray. And you have to live in the grays and manage them. So if you listen to people, then you avoid conflicts. And you hear what will create conflicts in a few years. And then you can prevent them by reacting early enough.
Yeah. I think this is a wonderful message to take away. Listen. And if you listen, it will avoid conflicts even from the very beginning onwards. I think these are very important words, not just for a tourism organization, but I think for the world as a whole.
Yes.
With these lovely words, I'm going to say thank you. I know you have a very busy man, not only in the winter, but now thanks to your 4-season or 5-season program. You're busy every day of the year. I really appreciate you taking the time to sharing this with us. I think there was a lot of supremely important and relevant and very interesting information in there. And I hope that our listeners will be able to deduce what's important for them and apply it right away. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.